Hey y'all, it's your old pal Opie Hendrix, and you're tuned in to KPFT, Houston's 90.1 FM.
My father was so ignorant I could hardly stand him. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in just 7 years. Welcome, everyone. We're glad you tuned in for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. And it's found only on Houston's community station, HD1KPFT. That's right. You found us again, or maybe for the first time. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and here we celebrate the power of story by placing a spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on voyages through windows of their souls and on fanciful excursions amid worlds of enchantment. Before hopefully returning us safely to the present, you've tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or your phone to 90.1. So what's your story? KPFT HD1 Houston's community station. And let's get to the reason you've tuned in tonight. Great stories. Specifically tonight, we're talking fathers. Fathers, grandfathers, father figures. June has that official dad holiday, so I thought, perfect. Now, there's an old Jewish proverb. One of life's greatest mysteries is how the boy who wasn't good enough to marry your daughter can be the best father of the smartest grandchildren in the world. That pretty much sums it up, I think, right there. Some of us are lucky enough to be in the position of being a grandfather and a father and a son and a grandson, for that matter. I bet we've even got folks listening in tonight who are great grandsons and perhaps great grandfathers. I've got several years to go on that great grandfather part of, hopefully. Now, to get ready for tonight's program, I sent a text message out to some folks with two simple questions. And I want you all to think about these questions, too. What is one phrase you remember from your father? And what situation would bring out that phrase? Now, I'll share those thoughts that I got back with you tonight, and I hope you'll think about those two questions yourself. You know, tonight, this month, the rest of the year, what is one phrase you remember from your father? Now, my first response was from storyteller Sue Kuntz. Now, she's a friend of the show. I know you've heard her voice on these airwaves before, and she's a friend of mine. And Sue offered two memorable quotes from her dad, always the overachiever, that's Sue. Two quotes. According to Sue, her father would say on a fairly regular basis, I suppose, it's amazing what unskilled labor can do. Now, the reason he would say that, and by the way, she had to pass this question on to her siblings as well. It formed a discussion around the airwaves of the Sue world, I suppose. And it was a phrase that mixed satisfaction and dismay in equal parts that was generally brought on when things didn't go well with DIY repairs around the house. How about that? It's amazing what unskilled labor can do. Now, Sue says, Dad wasn't the greatest at home repairs, and neither were the rest of us. Now, the second phrase. Now, this is no doubt in response to the aspects of moving a family from place to place around the world with military assignments, her father would say, "Our travels are great, but home is our favorite place." Now, here's a story from Sue featuring, among other people, her grandfather. It's called A Furbigated Catholic. Give a listen.
Oh, all of the above. Absolutely. Dad was in the Air Force for 21 years. And yes, we got to travel from, I was born in Germany, and we traveled to Abilene, Texas, but then on over to Yalova, Turkey, and then over to close to Tokyo, Japan, and then over to Hawaii, and in between places like Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And you know what? You know, I was always on American compound bases, but there was always off base. And so, yes, we got to hear the mixture of folk tales from those areas, and but also our own stories, which turned out to be pretty hilarious no matter where we were, because there were four of us kids, and that spelled out trouble. And with that, I'd love to tell you a story that came from Japan. It was, I believe, 1967. I was 8 years old. So I want you to think, all you listeners out there, you know, what you were doing when you were eight, when it came to your friends and when it came to possible when going to church on Sundays kind of a thing. Some of us didn't, some of us did. My mom tried to get us to a Methodist church if they were available, but if we couldn't find a Methodist church, depending on what base we lived on, we'd get to a Protestant church or some sort. But I do all to know that as an eight-year-old, I knew a little bit about religions. I loved being Methodist at that time. We had potluck dinners. And those potluck dinners on Sunday nights, you know, I thought that was part of our religion, which I thought was pretty cool. And we would have grape juice, you know, communion. And that was pretty amazing. And you know, bread. And I knew a little bit about the symbolism of both. But it was the food I was most encouraged by. And we'd get little crosses at Easter time if we learned some Bible verses. You know, that was being a Methodist. That was me being an eight-year-old. I knew a little bit about the Jewish religion because two of my friends were Jewish, and they were able to teach us Hebrew words, and we placed them up in the, you know, the girls' bathroom and the boys' bathroom at school and things like that. So, you know, it was kind of fun to know a little bit about the Jewish religion through the Hebrew words. And the Baptists, you know, I knew all about John the Baptist, so I figured all Baptists baptized grown-up people in bathtubs and the ocean and the lake. And I thought that was pretty amazing because we as Methodists pretty much got baptized as babies only, which I thought was kind of sad because I couldn't remember being baptized. So I did know a little bit. Now, being Catholic, that's where my story begins. For where we lived in Japan, in Kanamura, the buildings that we lived in, there were four families in each rectangular building on the base. And of course, you get to be really good friends with whoever is around you. And Kathy lived at the very end of this particular building we all lived in. And Kathy and Suzanne and I were great friends. And we were over at Kathy's house, which is just, you know, two steps down pretty much. And Kathy was showing Suzanne and I this beautiful necklace. At least that's what it looked like to me. And it was just gorgeous with these white and clear beads on it. And then a little cross. And I thought, oh, I love that, Kathy. Where did you get it? I need to tell my mom to buy that for me. And Kathy said, well, Susie, you can only get it if you're Catholic. I said, well, how can I get it if I'm Catholic? Well, you have to go tell your mom that you want to be Catholic. And then once you're Catholic, you'll get this. Well, that's all I needed to hear. So I ran on down the steps and back over to my house again, just right, right down the sidewalk. And of course, it's dinner time, and I rush in, and I'm so excited to share the good news with my mom and everyone else sitting around the table that we were now going to be Catholic. Won't that be cool, Mom? We'll all get these necklaces with a cross on them. It's going to be just cool. I get to share it with my friends, and I'll wear it every day. And Mom, of course, puts a smile on her face and tries to explain to me just wishy-washy stuff about, no, we're Methodists or Protestant, and we'll stay that way. It didn't make me happy at all. After dinner, I pounced upstairs. Now, Dad wasn't home at this point because he was part of the Korean War, but he got home soon enough to find out that I still wanted to be Catholic, and I wasn't going to let go that easily. Well, after that, I'd say about 3 months, closer to Christmas time, my grandparents, Grandma and Grandpa Hennings, Lloyd Hennings and Irene Hennings, both of them teachers, they flew to Japan to see all of us. And of course, they toured all around Kyoto and Tokyo and got to see everything they wanted to see and spend a lot of time with us. And finally, the day came where Grandpa, who was a not only a principal of his high school, Elyria High School in Ohio, but he was also a social studies teacher. He wanted to see our school, Chofu Elementary. Now, my mom was a teacher there. She taught third grade. And I happened to be in third grade that particular year. And so we all piled into the van. Grandpa sat in the front next to my mom, who was driving. And the rest of us four kids were in the back arguing, I'm sure, as usual. And everyone's kind of talking loudly. And there was a moment in the car where Mom and Grandpa were having this conversation. And Grandpa had proceeded to tell Mom that he had just become a furbigated Catholic. Now, let me say that again to all you listeners out there. He had just become a furbigated Catholic. You heard that right. And boy, I heard it too. My grandpa was not only a Catholic, he was a furbigated Catholic. Woo-hoo! You know what that meant? My brain just went off. Why? That would mean more than just pearls and clear jewels on that necklace. Why? I'm picturing rubies and sapphires and emeralds on that necklace. Because why? Because my grandpa was a furbigated Catholic. And what my grandpa is what we all are in that family. Well, I couldn't hold it in. I was just popcorn pan excited. Soon as that van stopped at Chofu Elementary and the doors open up, all the kids piled out and I just ran out and said goodbye to everybody. And there were probably about 2,000 of us waiting to get into the school on that black tarmac in front. And I suspect all 2,000 of those kids knew that Susie Berg was a furbigated Catholic before that bell ever rang. And I'm telling you what, I thought the world was right there for me when, after we all stood and said the pledge and sang the Star Spangled Banner and announcements came on, the principal then announced to my classroom that Susie Berg needs to find her way to her mother's classroom as soon as possible. Well, all the kids look my way. And of course, I stood taller than I ever stood before, knowing that there was going to be some big award, something given to me. And I walked out of that room and then ran up the rail, for this was a three-story building, and up and up and up to my mom's science classroom. And there she was. She was standing right outside the classroom with my grandpa right behind her. And I ran up to her and I said, "Mom, I know, isn't this cool? Grandpa, he's exactly what I knew he would be. I'm so excited." And Mom looked down at me with the sternest face I've ever seen, eye to eye, nose to nose. And she said, "What is the talk around town that you're a what? Mom, we're, all of us, are fumigated Catholics. You heard it in the van. Oh, we're going to all wear those necklaces. It's just going to be amazing. I'll pick mine out first, but then you guys can pick out anything you want." Well, Mom was totally puzzled. She was perplexed. But it was Grandpa who looked on down at Mom and then looked at me with a smile on his face. And I said, "Grandpa, he's smiling. He knows." And it was Grandpa who said, "Ann, why don't you let me talk to your daughter for just a moment?" So Mom, she scooted away and she checked out on the kids. And Grandpa got down on both knees. He was 6'5". And he looked at me and he said, "Susie, what exactly did you hear in the van?" I said, "Oh, Grandpa, I heard you tell all of us that you had just become a fumigated Catholic, which I'm so proud of you." But Grandpa, it looked like he was holding something in. He took a deep breath and he said, "Susie, I was telling your mom that I was brought into an organization and honored with becoming a Phi Beta Kappa, which is amazing. It's an honor society, a fraternity for educators." Of course, I didn't even know what that meant, a Phi Beta Kappa. And the only thought I had was, does that involve that gorgeous necklace I wanted? And in fact, it did not. That beautiful necklace I wanted, I found out later, it's called a rosary, a Catholic rosary. And as for a Phi Beta Kappa and a fumigated Catholic, I'll never forget that at one point, I was able to have my own rosary, if only in my mind.
Well, there you go. That's Sue Coons there telling us sort of a misunderstood a story of misunderstanding that probably turned out all right in the end. But can you imagine? And how she talks about the 2,000 kids on the tarmac all hearing about that, her becoming a fumigated Catholic even before the bell rang. That's a classic for sure. Now storyteller Mark Babineau, I texted him those same two questions as well. What's one phrase you remember from your father, and what was the context of that? And he sent me back. He didn't reply to the text. He doesn't do much of that text. And he called me straight up on the phone. And after he had already had an opportunity to send this to his brother, Ray. So they conspired. And Mark grew up in Southeast Texas. He was number 7 of 12 children. His father and mother raised up a pile of successful kids. A few of them are even teachers, like Mark was for umpteen dozens of years. And Mark shared this memorable phrase from his dad. He said, Dad would always say, it ain't worth it. And he wanted me to make sure that I put the accent on his pronunciation of the, instead of a TH at the end of worth, it was an F. It ain't worth it. And he continued, he said, Dad was all about life is short. We need to forgive. In fact, one year, his daddy bought him all the boys' T-shirts emblazoned with, it ain't worth it, with that F right there. It ain't worth it, dot, 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 forgiveness. Imagine hearing it ain't worth it as a family tenant amidst the chaos and buzz of a 14-person household. Don't you imagine there were a few times where some children got slighted and would come a-running complaining about some situation, and Daddy said, it ain't worth it. Forgiveness. That's what we do in this household. Now get on back to doing what you was doing. That's going to set you up for a complete long-lived life. And another phrase that Mark said he remembered, his father would say, he was quite the jokester, I guess. And he would say, I'm just funning. I'm just funning. And, you know, we might say, oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But his father was very precise. I'm just funning. Now, I like both of those phrases, but I think I prefer it ain't worth it. Just lock that one in the back of your head. It ain't worth it. Now, storyteller Rick Davis is going to share a story with us next that kind of reminds us that sometimes we might come across a man who is, well, maybe he's not your father, but maybe he holds a place in your life like a father, and maybe he has a lasting impact like a father without actually being your dad. Here's Rick's story.
The telephone rang. He could see it was his mother so early in the morning. He answered. His mother told him, Mr. Belzer died last night. The funeral's Wednesday. Memories flashed through Jack's mind like an old newsreel as he sat quietly remembering his childhood days. Jack, did you hear me? His mother tried to get his attention. Oh, sorry, Mom. Yes, I did. It's just been such a long time. A long time since I thought about Mr. Belzer. I'm sorry, but I honestly thought he died years ago. His mom remarked, well, he didn't forget you. Every time I saw him, he'd ask how you were doing. He'd reminisce about the many days you spent over at his side of the fence, as he's put it. Jack hesitated, and then he said, I love that old house he lived in. His mom remarked, you know, Jack, after your father died, Mr. Belzer stepped in. He made sure you had a man's influence in your life. Now, Jack thought for a while. He's the one who taught me carpentry. I wouldn't be an architect today if it wasn't for him. He spent a lot of time teaching me the things he thought were important. Mom, I'll be there for the funeral. As busy as he was, Jack kept his word. He caught the next flight to his hometown. Mr. Belzer's funeral was small, uneventful. He had no children of his own. Most of his relatives had passed away. The night before Jack was to return home, he and his mom stepped next door to see that old house just one more time. Standing in the doorway, Jack paused for just a moment. It was like crossing over into another dimension, a leap through space and time. The house was exactly as he remembered. Every step held memories, every picture. Each lamp, the pieces of furniture. Then Jack stopped suddenly. What's wrong, Jack? His mom was concerned, and then Jack spoke in barely a whisper. The box is gone. His mom asked him, "What box?" There was a small gold box right there on the top of that roll-top desk. He kept it there, locked up on that top shelf. I must have asked him 1,000 times what was inside. All he'd ever tell me, "It's the one thing I treasure most in life." Jack said, "Now it's gone." Everything about the house was exactly as Jack remembered, except for that box. He figured someone from the Belser family must have taken it. Jack exhaled and said, "Now I'll never know what was so valuable to him." He then told his mom, "I better get some rest. I have an early flight home in the morning." It was about 2 weeks since Mr. Belser's funeral. When Jack returned home from work that day, he discovered a note in his mailbox. Reading it aloud to himself, "Signature required on a package. No one at home. Please stop by the main post office within the next 3 days." Very early that next morning, Jack was at the post office before it opened. Soon as it did, he retrieved that package. It looked like it had been mailed 100 years ago. The writing was difficult to make out, but the return address caught his attention. It read, "Mr. Harold Belser." Jack took it out to his car. He quickly ripped it open. There inside was an envelope and that gold box. His hands shook as he opened and read the note in that envelope. "Upon my death, please forward this box and contents to Jack Bennett. It is the thing I valued most in my life." A small key was taped to the note. With his heart now racing, tears began to well up in his eyes. Jack carefully unlocked the box. There, inside, he found a beautiful gold pocket watch. Running his thumb slowly over the finely etched outside casing, he carefully unlatched the cover. Inside, he found these words engraved: "Jack, thanks for your time. Harold Belser." Jack could just catch his breath. He whispered aloud, "The thing he treasured most, the time we shared." He held the watch for a few minutes and then he called his office. He spoke to his office manager, "Franklin, please clear my appointments for the next 2 days." Now, Franklin was concerned and he asked if everything was all right. And Jack just said, "I need some time. Time to spend with my son. And by the way, Franklin, thanks for your time." Life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away.
Well, thank you very much, Rick Davis, for that story, the gentleman next door. I especially like that story, the way Rick tells it, that calm, even tone. It just makes you want to pull up a chair next to him and hear him tell story after story after story. We're going to have Rick on the show in a couple of months, so be sure and be looking forward to that. Now, if you're just joining us on So What's Your Story, welcome aboard. We're sharing father stories and grandfather stories and father type stories. After all, as Lydia Marie Child puts it, "Blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him father." Now, I really like that quote, but as someone who with my wife has been bringing very, very small children into our home for short stays, I can tell you that they're not always gentle voices, but nonetheless, blessed indeed is the man who hears many gentle voices call him father. This is Larry Thompson on So What's Your Story? only heard on HD1, KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, and 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget KPFT's free internet on HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We are proud as punch. Wait, is that what it is? We're proud as punch? I think it is. We're proud as punch. Well, that's what it is tonight. We're proud as punch to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, so what's your story is Houston's community show. We've got guests that are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, stories like you're hearing tonight. So let's get back to it. Now, I started prepping for the show by asking a few people these simple questions. What is a phrase that you remember your father saying? And, you know, lest we forget, sometimes it's a grandfather who fills in a dad role in our lives. Now, my very dear friend Ed Wilkes, I sent him that text and he responded with a giant letter that came across in about 12 different messages. But Dr. Wilkes says this. He says, I'm going to answer with a quote from my grandfather. He was a supremely patient man, an elder in the church, and a school principal for years in Taylor, Texas. Now, that's the home of the Taylor Ducks, no less. My grandparents, well, they took me and my brother to Galveston one weekend. And on our way back, we saw a billboard for Barnum and Bailey's Ringling Brothers Circus, and they were having it right there at the Astrodome. Now, of course, my brother and I begged to go, and after a few glances between my grandparents, who always talked with their eyes and could understand one another nonverbally, they relented, and to the circus we went. Now, it was, of course, colossal, stupendous, and indeed the greatest show on earth. At least it was to 7 and 10-year-old boys. Now, it was dark when we left the dome and started to drive back to Taylor with Mimi clutching her Exxon map and Granddad behind the wheel of that 68 Impala. We managed to get ourselves lost in unfamiliar Houston. We crossed the same railroad tracks several times, and Granddad was getting more than a little perturbed. In fact, in that dim dome light, with the crinkling of that road map, it was only accompanied by the murmuring of Granddad in the coarsest utterance allowable to a Church of Christ elder. Oh, thunder! This is a revolting development. Now, my brother and I from the back seat could tell that Granddad's patience with the streets and with the map and with Mimi was stretched beyond words. But those were the only words we heard every few minutes. Oh, thunder, this is a revolting development. Well, eventually, we fell asleep for the rest of the ride, back there in that spacious backseat, oblivious of the drive home in the dark, back to bucolic Taylor, Texas. I'll always remember Foy Edward Wilkes for his generosity, his kindness, and verbal restraint that night, that he said yes to the circus and never let on that he had any regrets. If I ever become a grandpa, I'll at least have some choice words to carry me forward. Oh, thunder, this is a revolting development. And thanks to Ed Wilkes for sharing that memory and having driven those same streets in the dark myself on various occasions, I can say without a doubt that his grandfather was much more verbally restrained than me. But speaking of Houston, let's talk about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, That's a great place to learn the art of telling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. The next swap is in just a couple of weeks. Visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. They're going to have that Zoom link and all the meeting details. They got the information on all their upcoming events. And you know what? While you're there, you might even consider becoming a member. Also, you can enjoy past recordings of So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, I think. They're listed on the menu under radio program. And don't forget, our friends at Moth Warehouse Live are back in full swing, usually the second Tuesday of the month. And you'll enjoy astonishing stories and get to know Houston's storytelling community. Another way to crank up your own storytelling skills is by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. And as I always do, I feel obliged to remind us all that storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. So even if you're out beyond the confines of the Grand Parkway, you can find storytelling peeps of all kinds. And you know what? Lest we forget that storytelling is not just a thing that happens here in Texas or even the United States. I have a little story I would share with you that is a very, 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 very Texas translation of an old Sanskrit piece. And it goes like, it's called The Echo. And it goes like this. One day, a father took his 8-year-old son for a mountain trek. And it was a day out for the father and son duo. The son was so excited to join his father for the adventure. An interesting thing happened during the trek. At one point, the son was feeling a bit tired, and he stumbled a bit. Oh, he cried out. Well, that's what you would do when you stumbled. And suddenly he heard back the same loud voice. That startled the boy, and the son stood up and exclaimed loudly, "Hello, who are you?" And the voice echoed back, "Hello, who are you?" The son, in a loud voice, asked again, "Don't you know who you are?" The voice echoed back, "Don't you know who you are?" The father was observing his son's reaction to all this. And the boy looked at the father, puzzled, and asked, "What is happening?" And the father smiled down at his son and told him to observe carefully. Now the father, looking into the valley, loudly asked, "You are a bad person." And the voice echoed back, "You are a bad person." The father then loudly said, "You are so kind and nice." And the voice echoed back, "You are so kind and nice." And the father turned to his son and explained, "This echo of our sound is just like how our life is. What you give, you get. And when what you feed it, you get back." How about that? That story is called The Echo. Now, you know, I've been talking about these text messages, and well, I did. I sent my own daughter, Jessica, that same message, you know, a little self-serving, you know, what's one phrase you remember from your father and when would he use it? Well, here's her response back to me. She says, "Dad, it's 4:30 in the morning." Now, she recently moved to San Diego. "I'm old. I forget things." But she continued, "I'm not sure I have one, really. Is that bad? At this moment, all I can remember is your storytelling and how animated you are when telling stories. Everyone who's met you says that's where I get it from. But I remember We always quoted movies and music and Jeff Foxworthy. How about that? The things you pass on to your kids. Now, I've got a story that actually fits in pretty well with that. This story is called It's His First Story.
So have a title. This story, this is a brand new story. I've never performed this story anywhere before.
Okay,
nobody's
so you're
heard
premiere
this.
It right
yeah,
here.
I'm going to premiere it right
okay,
here. So
great.
You're going to want to put this on your, you know, that catch-up show that,
oh, yeah.
that you've got coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This story came from, just like some of the other stories I have, something will happen. I saw an advertisement on TV for insurance, and the son wrecked the dad's car. And I thought, oh, that's horrible. How many times has that happened to you, you know, people you know? And I thought, well, wait a minute. I might be able to use something like this because, you know, I've been telling stories for quite some time and raising three kids. They've heard all my stories. They know the unbreakable comb. They know the
right.
armadillo demons.
Right,
they know all
right,
these
right,
stories.
Right.
And, you know, just like any kid growing up, you start to maybe experiment a little. You know, you probably did it when you were a kid and you try to emulate your old man if you can and
yep.
do the things that
yep.
your uncles
yep.
did, stuff like
sure.
that. And so
sure.
I got to thinking about maybe that one time when you're asleep at night and, you know, you just fell fast asleep. The phone rings and you roll over and you say hello and a feeble voice on the other end just says, "Dad." And you think automatically something has happened. You say, "Son, what is it? Are you okay?" And he says, "Dad, I wrecked your story." And I think, oh, you got to be kidding me. What, you know, and your parent side hasn't kicked in yet. Your performer side is there and you're like, oh no, which one is it? Oh, is there going to be a Facebook post about it? Is there photos? Was somebody there? Did anybody capture this thing? And then your parent takes over and you say, are you okay? And he says, yeah, I'm okay. But, and then you think, well, son, which story was it? And you're going through your catalog and you're thinking, oh, I hope it's not. And he says, Billy Ray loves moon pies. And you just think, oh, that son, how many times have I told you that's way too much story for you? You know, it's got speed. It's got strange corners. There's motions. There's screaming from the crowd. There's actions. It's much too much story for you. And your parent comes out again and you say, well, at least you're okay. The other part of your parent comes out and says, you know, it's time. It's that moment, that coming of age moment. And you set up an appointment the next week and you take them down to the used story store in San Antonio. That's like Half Price Books or something, right? It's time to get him his own first story. And so you take him in and right away the salesman descends on you and you're trying to hold him off. You know, hey, we're just browsing. We're just looking here. And he says, well, we're looking for something fancy. And you say, no, we're just looking for a good first, you know, good first story, a good starter. And he looks my son up and down and he says, you look like you might be interested in a classic. Let me show you something over here. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not going to go well. The classics, they take so much time and energy. I remember taking my daughter to the store to get some book on Greece. And we pulled out Euripides and I pointed to it. And I said, Euripides, you pay for these. And we slid it back in, you know, and I'm trying to steer him towards something a little more, you know, appropriate for a first story. And the salesman's talking to him and my son whispers, he says, you know, I'm looking for maybe something that's maybe a foreign job, maybe a cute foreign job. And I think, oh, son, you're going to have to be bilingual for that. You know, maybe we just need a starter collection, maybe some short stories, just something for you to. And he catches his eye on a little copy of London. And he's thinking, oh, London, maybe that's foreign and short stories. And hey, that's a good compromise. And the salesman pulls it out. And my son, he thumbs the pages, that used book smell. And he feels the corners. They're not too roughed up, you know. And he turns it over and he sees the sticker price. And he's like, hey, I can afford this. I'm taking it home. So we sign the papers over and we ride back home. And, you know, I have that gleam in my eye because I remember that first time I picked up Jack London, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, this my favorite one to build a fire. Well, these stories. He promises you he's going to take care of it, you know, and he's true to his word. It's It's cleaned. His hands are washed when he's reading, and he gets onto his buddies if they mishandle it, you know. And a few weeks later, he calls everyone together in the family, sits us all down. He says, I think I'm ready to take it for a spin. And for the next 10 minutes or so, he's reeling off a story. And, you know, he had a little pregnant pause here and there, you know, and he missed a line and just, you know, just briefly, but he did a fantastic job. And, you know, there's a special pride in a parent when that son breaks out his first story.
Well, there you go. His first story. Seems like I remember debuting that story right here on So What's Your Story so many years ago. And thanks to our super duper leader, Hank Rubchek, for giving me the opportunity to tell that story to y'all. And here we are years later, and I'm sharing it with you again as a part-time host. Boy, this show, So What's Your Story, brings it home every single time. Now, I'm going to insert a little story here. For years and years, my father was a minister. And in fact, the entire time that I knew him, he was a pastor. We lost him in 79, so many years ago. But nonetheless, the impact that he had on me, I feel it pretty much every single day, because storytelling was his impact on me, and the way he shared stories and the way he would use stories to teach, the way he would use stories to entertain, and, you know, the way he would use stories to inform. It seems that everything came from him in the form of a story. I remember one afternoon we would camp with the scouts. We would go for the week-long summer camp, and we would leave a couple of days early to arrive before everybody else. He loved to get his campsite set up, get all of the brush cleared, get all the area out. We had a tent that he had purchased when he was in the military over in Germany, and this tent had so many pieces and parts, it would have made a guy that works at IKEA jealous. There were canvases, and there were tiny little hooks, and there were adjustable poles, and every component was in a very tiny little canvas bag. It took us about 4 hours to get this thing set up. We would arrive a day or so ahead of time, get camp all together with our stuff, get a good night's sleep, and we'd always wake up early the next morning and drive back into town, this little town called Rockville. And they had a little diner, one of those little truck stop kind of diners with a gas station on one side, and all the trucker supplies in the middle, and a little greasy spoon restaurant attached. And there was a big long bar, and there were booths, those red, shiny, plasticky sort of fabric booths. And the tables had that silver metal all around the sides. We would always sit at the bar, and we'd jump up there, and the little ladies in their little pink outfits behind it, those dresses, you know, with the little aprons on the front, they would be coming around, pencil behind the ear and a little pad of paper. No computers back in those days. I mean, goodness, this was early 70s, I suppose, but they would ask, you know, one of them would come over and she would say, what can I do you for? And my father would always order breakfast. Didn't matter what time we actually got there, but he would always order breakfast. And, you know, these places, they serve breakfast 24/7. It wasn't a worry. And he would get 2 sunny side up eggs and some fried potatoes, black coffee. And he would tell me to get what I wanted, and I would always get some scrambled eggs and those fried potatoes and a large, tall orange juice. Now, my father always got his coffee black, but then he would doctor it. That's what he called it. He said, it's time to doctor it. And that was a cue for me or one of my other brothers, whoever was with him, to reach into the little container that would be on the table and pull out three sugar packets. And he had taught us to pinch them together right at the edges. And she would shake that sugar down and pack it together on your hand, rip those tops off and pour it into that cup of coffee. And then he would give three drops of milk. So he got her ready to go. He prepared that coffee, dressed it up. And we waited there at that bar for those two sunny side up eggs and for my scrambled and for our fried potatoes. And he took a sip of that coffee and he said, this is good. And the eggs arrived and my plate arrived and he began to cut into those sunny side up eggs. And he said to me, "Son, sunny side up is the very best kind of egg. It's all cooked around the edges. It's so happy in the middle, that little bulge of the yolk." You could just tell he was enjoying that sunny side up egg. And I asked him, I said, "Well, Dad, we have eggs at home all the time, but I don't believe I've ever seen sunny side up eggs on the table." And he said, "Well, son, probably time you learned this little tidbit. Now, you know your mother. She is one of the best cooks around. And I love her to death. She's my wife, and she'll be my wife forever. But that woman cannot cook a sunny-side-up egg. So, every now and then, I come out here to a diner like this and get one of those chefs back there around that grill to cook me up a sunny-side-up egg." Well, we sat there at that bar. I polished off those scrambles and those fried potatoes and every bit of that orange juice. And he finished up that first cup of coffee and a second cup of coffee and a third cup of coffee. Polished off those sunny side up eggs. And we got up from the counter and walked to the register, paid our bill, stepped out into the sunlight. I looked up at that sun, and even now, years later, stepping out of the house when the sun is up in the sky, that special kind of yellow always reminds me of that sunny side up egg. Now, my father, he had a couple of favorite folks he liked to listen to, and they were not really storytellers, I suppose, as we think of them today, but nonetheless, they told stories, and one of them was none other than that famous radio voice, Paul Harvey. Now, I found this, and I wanted to let y'all hear it. This is Paul Harvey, and he was kind of everybody's radio dad for a few decades, and he reminded us with this piece that he's reading this anonymous letter. Oftentimes, appreciation for Dad might come too late. But let's wind up this evening with the mesmerizing voice of Paul Harvey.
...for repetition than any other. It's a broadcast that I did first when my son was born. It's called What Are Fathers Made Of? Today, we're going to repeat that broadcast. And today I'm also going to include a letter from a son to his father, and I think your father might like to join us for this broadcast if you'd give him a phone call to be sure that he's listening. It is best, of course, during our special annual Father's Day broadcast, if Dad is accompanied at the radio by his sons and by his daughters. So, while you call your dad, tell him to tune in. I'll have this for you on page two. Dr. Jack Schreiber, Canfield, Ohio, longtime friend, sent me something years ago which moved him. It's from an anonymous son writing to his deceased father, and it sounds like something a family might have released without a name on it in order to share the beauty but protect the privacy. It's a letter which a son wrote later than he should have to his father, and from here on, for 1.5 minutes, I will be quoting. Dear Dad, I'm writing this to you even though you have been dead for 30 years. Whether you can read these lines, perhaps you can read my thoughts. But there are some things I have to say, even if it's too late. Now that my own hair is gray, I remember how yours got that way. I was such an ass, Dad, believing in my own teenage wisdom when I might have benefited from that calm, right, wholesome wisdom of yours. Most of all, now that I have a son, I want to confess my worst sin against you, the feeling I had that you did not understand. When I look back now, I know that you did understand. You understood me better than I understood myself. How patient you were, and how pathetic your efforts to get close to me, to win my confidence, to be my pal. I wouldn't let you. I couldn't let you. What was it that held me aloof? I'm not sure. But despite my best efforts, my own son had to build the same wall between himself and his dad. And there's no way that a dad can see through it or climb over it. And what a shame. What a waste. I wish you were here now, across this table from me, right now. There'd be no wall now. We both understand now. And God, Dad, how I do love you. And wish I could be your boy again. Well, perhaps it won't be long. And I'm guessing you'll be waiting to take me by the hand and help me up the further slope. And I'll put in the first 1,000 years or so, making you realize that not one pang of yearning you spent on me was wasted. It all came back. It all paid off eventually. I know that the richest, most priceless thing on earth and one of the least understood is that mighty love and tenderness and that craving to help which a father feels toward his boy. But no boy can really know that until the roles are reversed. Even now, Dad, I'm tired and would hasten to join you up there in the silence, except for my son. He's a fine young man. He's very capable. He's self-sufficient. But, well, I'll stand by a little longer, just in case he needs me. You understand. Your loving son.
Well, there you go. That's Paul Harvey right there with a letter to Dad. We're going to wrap up the program tonight, but keep it here because you know there's much more great programming up next. Don't forget, you're listening to member-supported programming on HD1, Houston's community station, KPFT. So What's Your Story comes your way every Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock. This is Larry Thompson, and along with the rest of the team, I thank you for listening. And remember what they say. Every son's first superhero is his father. Good night, y'all.
Song. I hope you don't mind, and if you do, I got this microphone. It just kind of comes with it. Sorry.
KPFT Artist Profile, Carolyn Wonderland.
Well, when I was a kid, that was a radio station that I would listen to at night under my pillows and in the dark when I was, you know, I thought it was very subversive and I couldn't wait to escape my bedroom and come to the Montrose. So yeah, it was a beacon in the night, man. It's the first time I got to hear queer radio, first time I got to hear what was going on in the Texas prisons. I mean, to me, it's not just music, but it was information. It was stuff that I would have never heard in the suburbs. As soon as I had a chance, I moved as close to KPFT as I could.
Listen for her music and other local artists right here on KPFT.
Come join us for the best in blues shows. It's Blues Sundays on KPFT. The sun comes up with the Blues Cats Lounge at 6, with Boyd Bluestein. At 8, it's Mrs. V's Blues. At 11, it's the Blues Brunch with Blues King Nuri Nuri. The Blues Hound takes over at 2 with Howling the Blues. To round up Blues Sundays, it's Clint Broussard with Blues and Hi-Fi. A great day of blues, Sundays here on KPFT.
One way to help us bring your KPFT's lineup of music and news is to donate a vehicle you no longer need. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-4255.